It's the Mike O'Mara Show.
So long, you fetus-faced windbag.
Thank you, Bob Costas. Welcome back to the Mike O'Mara Show. Hey, Beth Ann.
Yep.
Can we call Colette? Can we call Colette at the front desk,
yeah, please?
I think it's a good idea.
Just very briefly. We are going to be speaking with author Lynn Spencer.
Yeah.
Her book's Touching History, wonderful book about the experiences of 9/11, and gives you an insight that I think we all should have on this. Before we do that, though, let me just
heard.
Take care of some silly little business.
Oh, it's not silly at all.
Personal business that I want to cover here.
It's kind of important, really.
Just bear with me, ladies and gentlemen.
Get to the bottom of this.
JFK.
Hey, Colette, it's Mike.
Hey.
Who's that unbelievably pretty lady in the lobby? What's she here for? And just you know, keep it under your hat here. Be quiet.
She's applying for a sales position.
Yes!
Yeah.
Hallelujah!
Colette, make it happen. You know.
Yes, would you tell her, please, that she has been hired?
You know what I mean.
Yeah. All right. Now, who will be making that call?
Hedges.
He likes.
I think we're okay.
Yeah, I think we're gonna be all right.
All right.
What department is that?
Sales.
Oh, good.
All right. Is she doing the interview today?
Yes.
Oh, very good. Can you patch me through to Jeff Hedges, please?
Sure. Hold on. Right,
that's a good idea, Mike.
Thank you.
Being proactive, I like that.
Bear with me, Les.
Yeah.
Hedges.
General.
General.
Hi, how are you? Mike O'Mara from Studio B downstairs. How are you, sir?
Oh, man, and this came up as a private number. Have you stooped to that?
Oh, yeah. No, not at all.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, I'm just going through the front. Two words.
Are we on the air?
Yes, we are, of course. Yes, you know
don't
we're
you
on the air.
Don't you have to ask me if
yes,
it's okay?
Yes, is your permission to be on the air? Yes, stop. Don't do that to me. Jeff, very quickly, two words, okay?
Two?
Yes,
two.
Yes. Hire her. Thank you. That's all.
Whoa.
Yes.
This is the individual coming up here for an interview?
Yes.
And if it doesn't work out, you have an intern?
Sure.
Yes.
Paid out of your pocket?
Yes, absolutely.
Not a problem. Yes. Thanks for stopping by.
We'll thanks.
Cover it.
Nice
there
talking
no
to you.
There are no paid internships.
Take care. All right, hang up on him. Thank you very much. That's
good
the general.
Call.
I thought
good
that
call.
Went well.
We're close. We're very tight. Bear. Hey, Bear, how you doing? Bear's coming into the studio.
He's
hey, baby.
He's pointing at me. What I do?
What's happening? What are you doing, Bear?
What's going on, baby? How's it going?
Oh, he's getting them logged in.
Oh, man. Bear, you're the man.
Hey, Bear, while we have you in here, how's my iPod coming?
I should be back in a couple of weeks, hopefully.
He should be back
in
a couple of weeks.
Parts on order.
Couple of
is
weeks.
It Micro Center?
Wait, is this still from
Micro
the
Center.
Plug that
yes.
was jammed in?
Yeah. Bear took it to fix it and
just
broke
buy
it.
A new iPod.
I know. Yeah, it's got all my stuff in there.
Yeah, okay.
And I don't have it backed up or anything. Okay, enough of that. Hey, Bear. In the ache bray for Mr. Erkenspay's computer K on the air.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes. He wants you to do it during the break.
Yeah, during the break.
Since
thank
we're
you.
On the
thank
air
you.
Right now.
What?
Oh, okay.
No, what you're doing a show no, here. I know he's a TV star.
He thought it was important because it's me, Tony Perkins,
from
Fox 5 Morning News.
Fox 5 Morning News.
All right, with that.
That's okay. Yeah, we'll do it later.
Write
it down.
They didn't even ask me to do that. I don't know why I'm doing that.
All right, without further ado, let's get this lady on the air right now. This is Lynn Spencer, and her book is Touching History. Lynn, are you there?
I'm here.
Sorry for all that, Lynn. You know, we're just children, and we do silly things here. We can't help ourselves, okay?
I understand.
Very good. Now, your book, Touching History, if I can give our listeners an overview of what this is, these are the unknown stories of what people dealt with and some of the heroic things that happened on 9/11. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, it's a book about the human element of what happened that day, especially from the air perspective, the people that were in the planes, the military fighters of the airlines and the air traffic control centers and it's the people that couldn't watch it on TV but had to respond to it. And it's kind of the day through their eyes.
Now, the common impression, Lynn, is that we were woefully unprepared for the events of 9/11. How can you be prepared for something like that? But your book reveals many stories of heroism and people that really went above and beyond and responded to this in a very heroic way.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt. We were wholly unprepared for what happened. The airlines were, the air traffic controllers, the pilots, the military, and that's what these are the stories. I was amazed at how these people improvised because none of their rule books applied that day.
Right.
And they had to invent a methodology for defending the country on the fly, and they did.
And Lynn,
Tony.
I'm sorry. Lynn, really, what happened in the air had to do with commercial flights, as we all remember, in terms of having to get those planes down as quickly as possible, figuring out which planes were dangerous and which were not, and the military response to that. And you bring some background knowledge to this project. You yourself are a pilot?
I am. I'm an airline pilot.
Mm-hmm. And how did that inform your interviews with folks and the process of finding out what people went through?
Well, I think from the beginning, that's what gave me the credibility to speak to them, because I understood how our air traffic system works. I understood how pilots are trained, how controllers work. So I grasped how out of the ordinary what happened that day was. And I think a lot of the reasons there's so many misunderstandings about 9/11 and so many conspiracy theories is because people don't necessarily understand how air traffic is handled in this country, how airplanes work, how pilots work, and how we all communicate.
Was there any common thread that ran through all of this for people that were responding that didn't have the rule book? Was there anything that you saw similar in a lot of these stories?
I would say yes. I was stunned by how many people were willing to put their careers, and in many instances their lives on the line, to make decisions and respond that day. Whether it was, you know, the fellow that was in charge of the airspace that day, a gentleman by the name of Ben Sliney, it was his first day on the job in charge of the country's airspace. Mm. And without any guidance from up above, he realizes he's got to stop this madness that's happening, and he shuts everything down.
And he there was no protocol for it, so
no.
He actually had to make that call himself.
And
really, if it had been some sort of strange hoax or really nothing true, he would have been screwed, right?
Well, it had never been done before. And certainly, right. when he's looking up at the screen at the front of the command center, looking at all these flights, you know, flying across the country, he's seen every single one of them as a potential missile.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And when he turns to issue the order to get everything on the ground, he's well aware that this might be my first and my last day on the job,
yeah,
that these planes are getting out of the sky.
Lynn, you had the opportunity to talk to somebody that I've never read talking about this, and it's one person who had was in an extremely difficult position on that day. It was the jet fighter pilot who was sent in pursuit of United Flight 93. What did he tell you, and what was going through his mind that day as he's following a U.S. airliner?
Well, this fellow is coming back from a training mission, and he gave a story to the 9/11 commission, and they dismissed it, and they didn't bother to corroborate, and
wow.
I did, and so I got to the bottom of, okay, this guy says that he was coming back from a training mission, and he was sent out to take down United 93.
Mm. When you say they dismissed it, they took his testimony and they just didn't include it in the commission report?
And they called him a liar.
Why did they call him a liar?
That's a good question, because it wasn't that difficult to corroborate. I was able to talk to the air traffic controllers that were talking to this fellow. I was able to talk to his commander that was talking to the White House, the Presidential Emergency Operations Center at the White House. And I was easily able to corroborate it. And I think part of the problem was that the recording procedures on that day, when you're in the middle of a battle, you're not stopping to say, oh, by the way, it is 9:51 as I'm,
right,
you know, taking off.
Right.
That's not happening. And they were given some incorrect flight times, and rather than find out, gee, are these flight times really correct, they dismissed it. And as an airline pilot, when I was looking at the information and little things like the fuel burn, I'm like, you know, he didn't have a six-minute flight. You know, this guy, given his fuel burn, he was airborne for a good 30 minutes. And given
you're
what
talking
he
about
said
the fighter
did,
pilot, right?
The fighter pilot,
in
given
pursuit.
What he said he did and what the controller said they told him to do, this man's telling the truth.
So, Lynn, do you think it's laziness or a conspiracy that had them ignore what he had to say, this pilot?
I don't even think I would presume. I don't think there was a conspiracy.
So,
I think I can't explain why they did.
Well, I have a theory on that. I'll throw this out at you, Lynn. I have a theory that maybe you've got the commission report that really doesn't want to share with the American people that we were about to, you know, shoot down a civilian airliner, even though it was
right,
probably going to happen, because we had enough information at that point where they had to make that kind of call. This is probably something they didn't want to make public. Is that a possibility?
I know that's a possibility. I also think that the 9/11 commission was looking at more traditional chains of command in the military organization, and they were looking at orders coming out of NORAD, who was in control of the air defense on that day. And these orders didn't come through NORAD to this fighter pilot. They came directly from the vice president through the Secret Service to this fighter pilot. And that was another story that really touched me in writing this book. You know, the commander at the D.C. Air National Guard who decides he's going to follow an order forwarded from the vice president through a Secret Service agent to send one of his fighters to take out United 93, knowing that he's putting his career on the line because he's sidestepping the military chain of command. The Secret Service is not part of the military chain of command.
And I can't think of anything that would be more difficult for anybody in the military to get an order like that, where you're actually sitting there and they're saying, go, you know, shoot down your own people. It's just, and you know, this is a brilliantly, beautifully sunny day. And I love the way you talk about, there's an expression when you read the first chapter of your book, when it's, they describe the weather. What was that again?
Severe clear.
What is it again?
Severe clear.
Wow. And, you know, being up in New York as Buzz and I were, Tony was up there also.
Yes.
You were GMA back then, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And, you know, Good Morning America, and we're broadcasting, and all of us were on the air that day. And that's the thing really that stands out in my mind almost the most. It was such an amazingly gorgeous
crisp
day.
And clear.
And, you know, and now you get into the GMA studios before the sun comes up. So
sure.
You probably, you know, you're working. And what was it like for you when all this hit? I mean, I don't think I've ever talked to you about it. We might have had a conversation about it after.
I'll tell you about it. Obviously it was a gut-wrenching day for everybody. But, you know, the thing about it, as you say, is it was such a beautiful day. And there was a lot going on in New York City that day with the elections and all of that type of thing. Mayoral elections, right. And so as things began to develop, there was initially this air of incredulity. Thank you.
That
you can't believe what is happening happening. So you had to go through that first, and the denial of what you were seeing, and then the acceptance and figuring out, oh, my God, we're under attack.
Lynn, is there anything we can learn, you know, now? Because I get the impression that, and it does sound like we're doing the Darth Vader. Beth Ann, we just kind of monitor. When I'm talking, just keep it down and then turn her up when she's ready to talk. Lynn, is there anything we can learn now from this? I still feel as though we're kind of cruising through our life, and we have our issues with politics and everything else, but we're still maybe not prepared the way we should be, or maybe vigilant enough. Can you get anything from this book on how to what can we learn from
what
from
did
your book?
You learn from this about this?
Epilogue in the book is written by the gentleman, General Larry Arnold, who was in charge of air defense for the United States on 9/11, and he writes a very powerful epilogue, and it reminds us that we can't always be prepared to fight yesterday's battle. We need to be prepared to fight tomorrow's battle. And what scares me, having spent 3.5 years researching all this and what happened that day and the failures that day, is that once again the talk of lessening our air defense mission is being heard and thrown around the Air Force on Capitol Hill.
Mm-hmm.
They're losing their funding again. It's being lessened, and they're talking about a smaller air defense.
Does a lot of this, not to get overly political on this, but does a lot of this have to do with the resources that are being committed to Baghdad, to Iraq right now?
I probably couldn't even speak to why it's happening. I'm just aware that it's happening.
Right. I would say, I mean, you know, when you're talking about the millions, the billions of dollars that have been, spent on the conflict in Iraq, I would say that that's military budgeting, and that's what you're dealing with. That. What was the most common mistake that was made through your interviews? What do you think the most common mistake was that was made by people that day?
Wow. I would probably have an easier time saying the thing that seemed to go right most of the time. But if I were to say the common mistake, it was the inability of the people to be able to communicate with each other because of secure telephone systems that weren't compatible. The FAA literally could not talk to NORAD because they had separate secured lines.
Have we at least gotten that right, Lynn? Have we at least fixed that part of it where the interagency communication is better than it was? Have we made any progress in that department?
You'd be astounded at the intercommunication now, and you'd be astounded. I think most Americans would be very glad and surprised to know how interconnected aviation is now with the military and how every one of their flights is being watched. In fact, when I was meeting with the NORAD commander out in Colorado Springs year before last, some radio in the background was on, and he said, "Did you hear that?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Oh, well, that's a United Airlines plane that just missed a radio handoff 10 seconds ago." He said, "I know about it today." I didn't on 9/11. Mm-hmm.
So that's something. Now, when you're talking about a radio handoff, you're talking about when they're going from say the tower at an airport to the ground control in another part. Is that the handoff you're talking about?
Yeah, they're being handed off as you fly across the United States. You're being handed off between controllers. You leave one fellow's airspace and you enter another airspace, and you're handed off to a new controller. And so NORAD knows instantaneously. They know real time. Everything that is happening in the skies. If a pilot is saying, I'm diverting because of a medical emergency, there's the technology in place now for a weapons controller at NORAD to query through the air traffic controller that pilot, real time.
That's amazing. That's good. That's a positive,
so,
I think.
Lynn, in spite of the problems that you turned up in doing this book and researching this book, it sounds to me like you also found hope in humanity, hope in people in doing your research.
Oh, incredible. The people I met and the stories they shared, I think they are the story of American ingenuity and bravery and courage. It made me proud. I felt really privileged and honored.
You know, you hear a lot of talk about apathetic Americans, and I hope this doesn't sound too overly patriotic, but I do think as a people we do tend to step up and respond when it hits the fan. And it seems that this book is filled with those examples of people that didn't even know what hit them.
Right.
But still made the very difficult calls.
They did. And their actions and their bravery, I mean, they saved lives because there were other hijacked airliners that day. And their actions by keeping the planes on the ground, by landing everything, by... by taking such proactive measures. There one controller at Boston Center, in the back of his manual, it said that he could directly dispatch fighters in an emergency. So totally ignoring his chain of command, he gets on the phone to Otis Air National Guard Base on Cape Cod.
Yep.
And it's because of that phone call that when the scramble order did come down through NORAD, those fighter pilots were already in their plane.
I think it's important to point out, too, I remember going back just to working on memory now, is the fact that that day on some of these planes that weren't allowed to take off, didn't they find box cutters in some of the seats that were, on these planes that weren't allowed to take off after all this happened, right? There were going to be other planes involved in this, weren't there?
Yeah, and it was the airlines, the airports. The FAA, they took very decisive actions.
Yeah.
In spite of the fact that they weren't prepared and there was no rule book telling them what do you do when we're under attack by our own airliners.
And that's the thing that we want to be sure to point out with this book. Everyone knows the story of United 93 and the extraordinary actions that the people on that plane took.
And thanks to cell phone technology, that's the only way we would have known what would actually happen on that flight.
But on all of these other flights, people were taking actions, whether it would be the pilots or whoever, individual actions to help get these planes on the ground and realizing the enormity of what was going on to help get people to safety and to help clear the clear the air, literally.
And the one last question I wanted to, we'll let you go, Lynn. I wanted to ask you one last question about you. You seem to have had obviously you're in the airline business, and it affected people, as you mentioned in the book. You know, people that were in your line of work. This situation lingers. Why this incredible obsession with this? This seems to have possessed you.
What made you do
since
this?
9/11, and you've made this kind of I don't want to say your life's work, but this has occupied a lot of your mind since 9/11. Why such passion for this issue?
This is what I've done full time for 3.5 years now, and I think I think it's because as an airline pilot, I took this incredibly personally for a lot of reasons. Number one, 9/11 happened because four cockpits were penetrated. And I was keenly aware that on that day, given my training, my aircraft could have been taken over too because of the way our whole mindset and how we were trained. And for me, I needed answers. I needed some understanding of what happened and why and how it happened. And I also recognized the historical significance of the fact that we have a civil-controlled airspace filled with thousands and thousands of airliners. And on that day, without any preparation or plan, every aircraft was brought down, and the military took control of the skies. We had a military-controlled airspace. And as an airline pilot, all of this, I needed answers. I needed to understand better why. And I felt compelled. I really felt after reading the 9/11 Commission report that something was missing, and it wasn't enough. Their explanations didn't satisfy me. And I guess I was possessed. I felt compelled to dig deeper, and I had to talk to these people and find out for myself what happened and why did it happen.
Lynn, let me ask you one more question. Do you have concern now? Because although a lot of things are better and we take the threat seriously now and we know what the possibilities are, the airline industry is in duress, in a state of duress, and they're having to cut back wherever they can. The airlines themselves are in financial trouble. We don't know where all of this is going to end up. Do you have any concern about how that will impact future commercial airline safety?
I don't believe it will impact safety because no airline wants to lose an aircraft.
Right.
They're in the business to transport their passengers safely from point A to point B. And I think there's so many systems in place, and I think the issues we're having with the price of, you know, oil and therefore jet fuel and all aren't going to change the, you know, airline industry.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see it affecting safety.
Where are you on pilots carrying guns in the cockpit? How do you line up on that one?
The motto from airline pilots on 9/11 is never again, never forget.
Right.
And Americans would be shocked at the number of pilots that are federal flight deck officers, they're called.
Which means they have carry permits, they can carry weapons. Is that right?
They can carry weapons.
We'd be pleased.
As federal flight deck officers. And I'm supportive of the program because it's one more way to protect America.
Absolutely.
And it's not the last line of defense. Our military and our air alert interceptors, our air defense interceptors, are the last line. And if somebody gets through the cockpit, well, they're not going to get past our fighters.
Are other pilots grateful you wrote the book?
The pilots seem to be very pleased, and the Airline Pilots Association seems to be very happy with the book because they feel it captures a lot of what happened, how the pilots felt, how they responded.
Cool.
And they did respond. You know, none of their rules worked for them that day, and for many pilots, for the first time in their career, they were afraid in their planes that day because they had never trained for what happened. It didn't make sense. They were hearing strange things. They were getting strange instructions. Some of them couldn't reach their airline, you know, when they tried. And yet they took measures to protect their passengers and their flight decks and get those planes on the ground.
Well, if you think you've heard everything about 9/11, I urge you to read this book because you haven't. It's called Touching History. Lynn Spencer, thanks so much for talking about this. It's obviously still on a lot of our minds. I think most people think about it all the time, and it won't leave us anytime soon, and it's a wonderful book. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Lynn.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, take care. She's gone.
I love the subtitle of the book. Really says it all. The story of the drama that unfolded in the skies over America on 9/11.
And I'm with her, I think. You know, when you're talking about guns in the cockpit, it's like, you know, more power to them.
That's
get them
fine.
Certified and stuff. However, I do think, you know, you take a shot at somebody, kind of blows a hole in a window, and then sucks us all out.
You got to be safe.
Take that chance.
I disagree with having the flight attendants have guns because some of those flight attendants have been rough.
I've always been a believer. I've always been a believer that all the passengers that are flying first class should be able to carry guns.
Oh, great!
That's my opinion. I could be wrong. We're going to take a short break. Hollywood hot sheet with Tony Perkins.
Yeah, man.
Substituting for Buzz Burbank, which is weird because he's still here.
I'm all right with
that'll be coming up when we come back on the Mike O'Mara Show.
It's the Mike O'Mara Show.